I've just been watching my little thingy on the screen. Yep.
I think mine's still a little loud. Alrighty, you ready to go?
Yeah, that's not fair for yours to be so dang loud.
Well, I think it also started with me yelling as part of the reason why.
Well, yeah, but even still.
Yeah. Alright, okay. Ready to go?
It looks even. We're right. Even.
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. I have never, ever paid attention to your waveform when you start this. Good God.
The way I really like hit those peaks on, hey!
Oh, manzers. No, because even in the little example that you just did, not half as bad. My God, the poor thing. She's working overtime.
Oh, she's doing fine. The microphone's doing just fine. Today we are watching Series 7, Episode 4, The Power of Three.
Hooray. There is nothing about the thumbnail from this episode, nor the title, that makes me... intrigued in any capacity.
Well, you know that it's the power of three is math
is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
This episode's just like where Doctor Who gets weirdly religious,
like extraordinarily so.
Just like the Doctor looks you square in the face. Jesus is real, and he died for your sins. I'm the Doctor. Does like stares into the camera while he does it.
Very. I can't even say rewatched. Spaceballs is one of my favorite movies. That mm-hmm. gets like a...
That's on rotation for you.
Yes, it absolutely is. I did not realize how many times they do look into the camera to say things.
Everybody got that? Yeah, that's a movie with a very thin, if it at all existent, fourth wall.
Oh, my God. The fourth wall is a veil. It is a spider's web.
The fourth wall is like some lace. That's all it is. It's a sheer curtain.
The fourth wall is a pair of shutter shades.
And they're turned open.
Yep.
Well, since you can't really guess anything from the thumbnail, how about you guess some stuff for the cat?
All I can see is that it's red and it is Rory and Amy.
Yeah, Rory is holding Amy's face.
And not unlike the way you do, which is kind of sweet.
Aw.
I know. Aw. You remember how we're dating?
I do remember that sometimes. But since you can't really guess much from the thumbnail, maybe you can guess some stuff from the Cassie Professy today.
Hooray.
For the power of three. Because I would love to like give you some setup or some trivia, but the thing is, I don't know how to talk about this episode without spoiling the entire premise of it.
Is it a good episode?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it's one of the stronger ones, especially this first half of the season. But it's also just, it's a very different kind of episode. Like I said, every episode this season.
Different in the same way as like The Girl Who Waited, because I did not realize that one is still stuck on me. I think I liked that episode.
It's not as like emotionally dramatic as that one, but it's very different from like the usual.
It's no town called Mercy.
It's a different dinosaurs
on a spaceship.
Yeah, it's a different formula. They're not doing the same thing here because, and I guess this isn't too much of a spoiler for you. The Doctor doesn't go anywhere this trip. He is a guest at Amy and Rory's house for this episode.
Fun.
So instead of going on an adventure in time and space, he goes on an adventure in 2012 on Earth. And because of that, I think it's memorable because it's so different from everything else.
Okay.
So let's get some Cassie Professy guesses in here and we can get into it so we can talk a little bit more about the episode proper. In this episode, one of our core trio, meaning the Doctor, Amy, and Rory, has a gun pointed at them while they don't have pants on. Can you guess which one?
So I immediately defaulted to one of the men.
That's a trick question, and Amy's wearing a skirt.
Is it?
No.
Okay. It's like, that's really...
They are definitively...
It's like, that's really fucked up if you're going to be like, it's because the doctor's wearing a dress.
No, I will just come out and say whoever it is in their underwear.
The doctor.
Okay, so you think you're going to see the doctor's boxers?
Yes.
Doctor's tighty-whities?
Yes.
Do you think the doctor is a boxers or a briefs man?
Both boxer briefs. I think he likes the flexibility of boxer briefs, but likes having his balls cradled. Knows that they're safe.
Is that true for all three of them that you've seen so far? Tennant, Eccleston, and Matt Smith?
Oh, Eccleston absolutely is a boxer's guy.
Because I think Tom Baker just is his full commando. Like, he doesn't even wear underwear. No.
Absolutely not.
We actually do eventually find out what kind of underwear the doctor wears.
I would also think that Two doesn't wear underwear as well.
I think Two wears like 7 pairs of underwear.
No, see,
for security.
Yeah, but I could also, in my head, he's the type of man to wear a kilt, but in the traditional sense. So he absolutely is not wearing underwear.
Gotcha. Yeah. I also
easy access. Come on.
I think we had mentioned in our, fashion show episode that Capaldi eventually reveals what kind of underwear the doctor wears, or at least his iteration of the doctor wears.
Oh my God. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. We'll get to that eventually. But for now, the second part of the Profassi today is that in this episode, a traumatic health event that kills humans only handicaps the doctor. Can you guess what that handicap might be?
I was not expecting that.
Or what that health event might be.
Okay, so your particular choice of words, mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be a disease that kills humans, only handicaps. And I went, that's so mean. Only people who are handicapped are getting sick.
That's all. That's so bad.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But no, that is not what happened, though.
Can you please repeat the question? Because I distracted myself.
There's a traumatic health event that impacts many people across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor is one of the people that suffers from it. But while it kills humans, it only handicaps the doctor.
Okay.
Can you guess what that traumatic health event might be?
I mean, this is such a... It is a complicated question to answer in the year of our Lord 2025 post-pandemic.
Yeah.
Because now I'm like, well, could it be some kind of like virus?
Mm-hmm.
Like big, scary virus type thing?
Could be. It wouldn't necessarily be topical, but they could be prescient.
Yeah, but then that just then opens up a whole host of like options.
Mm-hmm. I would take disease if you just wanted to say disease. Or could it be something else?
When did this episode air?
2012.
Okay, but like what month?
I believe this was October.
Okay, so this could potentially be kind of spooky.
It could potentially be. I mean,
like, I know that they don't lean super heavy into like Halloween specials,
mm-hmm.
but I also wonder if at this point they're like, this is coming out in October. We can make this kind of a scary one.
Sorry, I was slightly incorrect. It's September 22nd.
Okay.
So it's a little early for writing on a Halloween-related thing.
Well, depending on who you are, if you're not a pussy.
I meant for most people.
Most people are pussies, I agree.
Too early for a Halloween special to air on TV.
Fair. I guess I'll just go with, if I say disease/virus.
Yeah, I'd take that if it's like a flu or something like that. Yeah, okay. So, let's find out.
Wow. Who, what? Hello? Zach, are you here? Is Zach in the room with us right now?
Sorry, I guess I'm just in the mood to peek the mic today, I guess. I hope that doesn't really come across in the audio.
Yeah, oh my geez.
Anyway.
I looked over and you turned into a little boy.
Let's find out if the
doctor...
Let's find out together if the doctor has a gun pointed at him while he's in his tidy whities.
I would like to report that I wrote that down as Dr. No Pants.
Dr. No Pants. We will find out if this episode is Dr. No Pants and if there's a virus that kills people but only handicaps the doctor as we watch Series 7, Episode 4, The Power of Three.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. Three can be as bad as one.
Especially when three has a gun.
Especially when one of the three has a gun and they're pointing it at the person with no pants.
See, we tied it all together. This is the kind of artistry we make on this show.
Mm-hmm. No, we're really masters of the craft.
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by the number 7. Specifically, the individual known as 7 has escaped containment. Convicted in 2011 for the devouring of 9, 7 was sentenced to life in a high-security numerical facility. He was considered stable. He was considered reformed. But he was always considered odd. If you see 7, do not approach. Do not count. Do not joke. Do not, under any circumstances, make a pun. 7 is dangerous, 7 is hungry, and 7 is prime to kill again. And if 7 asks if you've seen 9, you haven't. You never have. There is no 9. Back to the episode! And we are back from the power of 3.
Rory and Kiss and Amy were kissing.
Do you think they like each other?
Zach, they were kissing.
They were huggling and kissing.
That's all they do when the doctor's not there is kiss.
They kiss and lay in bed and talk about whether they should go see the doctor again.
That's what the doctor thinks is all they do, yes. I am a little bit upset that Rory was the one. I should have known better. But what would you rule disease/virus?
So the answer was cardiac arrest. It causes heart failure. So that was what I was looking for. Specifically because it only handicaps the doctor because the doctor has 2 hearts. Hmm. I was curious if you remember it because that happened to Tennant once. If you remember in the Shakespeare episode, there's a witch that stops his heart, not realizing he has 2 hearts.
Of course I remember that. Wasn't that one of the times where he gets all like...
He's all scrambly on the ground? Yeah.
Yeah, a little
where
scramble
where David Tennant goes full waggling arm flailing tube man, yeah.
Yeah, a horizontal car sales. I should have remembered.
Yeah. I mean, and I think expecting to see Rory in his underwear as like a demeaning tactic certainly feels appropriate for this show. This show really likes poking fun at Rory.
Well, I thought because this was going to be a different like Dr. Amy Rory episode, mm-hmm. that it was going to be like the doctor is so
out of his depth
that now he's like trying to figure out and like spice things up for himself by not wearing pants and then have somebody pull a gun on him. Like
he's wearing the bow tie around his tie like a garter.
I had logic for it.
No, I totally get that. And I do think that would be interesting to have an episode where the doctor's put on the back foot the entire time. And so he becomes kind of like the Rory of the episode, for lack of a better term. Like, he's the one the show is poking fun at. There is a little bit of that, especially during his little montage where he's painting the fence and kicking a soccer ball 5 million times.
His 12-year-old boy montage, yeah. I really like following that same trail that the doctor is addicted to Amy and Rory's Nintendo Wii.
Specifically playing Wii Tennis, it seemed. Or Wii Sports Tennis.
There's something so simple about a man from outer space being so enraptured by a Nintendo Wii, Wii Sports specifically, not just like Mario Kart or Animal Crossing, because who fucking wasn't? But Wii Sports, and not Wii Sports Resort. And just a regular one.
And the way it would have been like even more relatable, though, would be to watch him specifically playing Wii Bowling and trying so hard to get the thing just to roll straight.
See, because my vice was the Wii bowling. That was the like 100 pins.
Oh yeah, I remember that one.
Oh, the sound. Editing, Zach, insert it here. Strike. Oh, the sound.
Yeah. So I had a good time with this episode. What did you think of it, Cassie?
I liked it.
Yeah, I think this is a lot of fun. It's a very, and I think you also get what I mean when I say it's a very different episode. It's a very different.
Well, because it has the return of the pond VO, which I didn't mind that.
Yeah.
Because it does preface it of like, oh, okay, power of three cubed.
That's actually the only problem I have with the episode is that like little tie up at the end.
Oh, me too. We don't have to jump to the end right now.
Yeah, I don't mind the montage at the beginning because I feel like that does set up the like, here is why this episode is different from other episodes. So whether you're tuning in for the first time, this is not the usual thing. This is going to have a different vibe because the vibe is usually like running around action, adventure, time and space. And this is very much like character-driven comedy moments built around being stuck in a house looking at cubes.
It was very mundane, yes, for the most part.
Yes. And
because even when it wasn't mundane, we don't really have an explanation,
yeah,
for the Birdo people.
They just work for the Chakri. They're just kind of there.
Oh, you mean the Zachary? Yeah.
I can't believe I've never once thought that while watching this episode. I've watched this episode a handful of times and I've never once been like, that sounds like my name.
Why
you hear
would
it
you?
Once and immediately go, Zachary. And I go, oh, no, I don't want to be this crackly thumbprint of a man.
The tally.
The Zachary, and they will serve the tally.
Mm. Yeah, he does have a very specific Alan Tudyk as Clayface quality.
The tally.
Yeah. You're welcome, everybody listening, who just got to experience me and Zach doing our very best Clayface impressions at the same time.
Do you want to do it a little bit so they can get yours?
No, I think it's funny to just have both of us overlapping each other going, it's hilarious.
Yeah, this is a goofy little time for sure. And I really think a lot of that is built around the fact that in addition to our main three, we get the return of one Brian Williams.
Again, I love Brian. My God.
You know, this show just has some wonderful dads. We've got
Brian's my favorite.
We've got Pete.
Like, Pete's fine.
Yeah, we got Pete. And then we've got Wilf, who is really a granddad.
Oh, no, I forgot about Wilf. Okay, hold on.
Wilf is really a granddad, but it's the same vibe.
No, especially because Dad is not in the picture. He's
the father figure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we've got Brian. And they're all wonderful dads. And I'm so glad they're all here. I'm so glad there's a show with wonderful dads. It is hard to decide between like fully supportive, wonderful Wilf and like clearly autistic coded Brian.
Brian's log. Maybe not call it that. Brian's log, day 63.
And he proceeds to do that for 361 days.
Good man.
Because he's doing what the doctor said.
Well, because I was like, man, that's really silly. Like, he was so hopped up on, like, explore the world, like, grab life by the panties and just go. But I also realized, like, he's an older man. If he's spent a good year and a half, 2 years traveling and being wild and free,
mm-hmm,
and now he has somebody who is sitting there telling him, hey, do this. Oh, thank God. Direction. Yes.
Thank you for helping my retired self find something to do other than fix the lights.
Oh.
I seriously just put this together saying that he was waiting for 361 days. I realize that means that it was a full year.
Yeah.
Because before he starts doing Brian's log, he starts watching the cubes inside the TARDIS for 4 days, making it a full 365 days of him watching the cubes before they start doing stuff. And I love that his justification was, oh, well, time does fly when you're alone with your thoughts.
That's man who's not plagued with anxiety, depression, and
that is a man who has not undergone most of what we've gone through in our lives. That's a man who got to keep his house in 2008.
Or not, because at the very end of the episode, he tells Amy and Rory, no, what you two want is the doctor. And the doctor wants you.
You go out there and save the world. Save as many worlds as you can.
What about you, Brian? Somebody's got to water the plants, which means Brian doesn't have a house. Brian is sending his son and his daughter-in-law away so he can live in their house.
Well, I mean, they've got other rooms in it, so I think Brian just wants the house to himself. Do you think he throws, like, bitchin' ragers when they're gone?
No, absolutely not. I think that he just pulls a full Arthur Dent and, like, lives his everyday doing the same thing. Mm. He's a man of routine. Autistic motherfucker.
He starts Brian's log. I don't know what to do now. I'm out of cubes. All of them are gone.
Well, because there's also something to be said of, like, I do think that if cubes mysteriously appeared, absolutely, you would have people bringing them inside, getting them little outfits to wear, uh-huh, setting them up in little situations. There would be no question with the way that people would immediately adopt the cube as one would a pet rock or a labubu. Mm-hmm. So whatever the Zachary, the alien, the tally, absolutely going, what is something that we can put in the human's grasp that is unassuming, that will be forgotten, but will absolutely be adopted very quickly? I know, a matte black cube.
Let us send down small rotating circles. Sir, they already have Roombas? Shit! The tally will tell them to send down cubes.
Like a Rubik's Cube. No, just a regular cube.
Make them shiny and reflective. They like the shiny click-clack rocks. Our research has determined that they play Dragons and Dungeons.
D'Andy. Yeah, you know that there would absolutely be some group that would take one of those and immediately turn it into giant dice.
And then be so mad when the cube started counting down and had a 7 on it. Like, no, you're a 6-sided cube. This is wrong. No,
nobody counted the inside.
What did you think about that bit? Because I'm like, Cassie's going to think that's really clever or really stupid.
I kind of liked it.
Not if you count the inside.
I kind of liked it. The doctor also had two monologues in this one.
Oh, yeah?
I liked the running monologue a lot. He's not running away. He's running towards.
Yeah, well, he has his moment with Amy and they're sitting on the pier.
This makes me want to go back into acting so that way. Because here's a fun little tiddly bit about me. Mm-hmm. When I was in school, high school, grade school, college school, mm-hmm, whichever.
One of them.
Whenever an audition for something came up and it said to use a 1-minute monologue, mm-hmm, whatever, mm-hmm, I was very, very much under the impression that it absolutely needed to be a monologue from a play or a musical. Mm-hmm. So I made that window very small. Same with like music and songs. And I thought, oh, this has to be from something that is a Broadway production. Not even for a fraction thinking, oh, well, there's some TV shows I watch with some really good, mm-hmm, monologues and songs in them. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much better I would have been as an actor if I had opened my little brain up just a little bit more?
If you had watched Doctor Who and could quote Matt Smith at your professors.
Well, no, but I'm really thinking like, oh, yeah, that's a really good, like, that's not necessarily a monologue for, it's not gender coded is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just you isolated. It's just really nice.
Can I tell you, now that you're bringing this up, could I tell you something that it's not necessarily a spoiler, but it is kind of just a fun fact. You bringing this up, if I... There was a period of time where I very strongly was thinking about being an actor, and one of the monologues I had worked on during that time is from Matt Smith's run of Doctor Who.
Is there video of this?
No, I never like recorded it.
Okay, I thought you were gonna be like you did a self tape and
I never even got that deep into it. I was more just like, okay, what would I? It was literally just like I had just gotten laid off from a job, trying to think of what I was gonna do.
And you went, shit, now it's time to be an actor.
Well, it really was just like, well, I mean, if you're going to try it, might as well try it while you got to find something. And so I did like a class and I prepped like monologues and things like that. One of the ones I listed is from an upcoming episode of Matt Smith. You'll probably clock it the second it happens. Because, you know, Matt Smith knows how to because Matt Smith knows how to monologue. So they do a lot for him. They really like it making him do that. Everyone listening probably knows what I'm talking about.
Everybody who's cool and that is following this journey with me doesn't, Zach. Jesus Christ.
I also think that was just a really nice moment for the Doctor and Amy to have together, because a lot of this episode was about the pull Amy and Rory are feeling between Doctor life and real life.
Well, because the Doctor comes in with like manic pixie terror goblin energy. And Rory even has a line that I wrote down because I liked it, which was, what you do isn't all there is, which was like, as a recovering narcissist.
A recovering main character.
Yeah, geez. Yeah. What I do isn't all there is. That's so true and accurate. Man.
Especially because that came right after the Doctor, like, basically talk down to them about how his like nursing job is so little and cute. And he's like, my job is to save people's lives. Go fuck yourself. And I'm like, man's got a point.
I really like that they made Rory a nurse for that reason.
I find that
say what you will, the best healthcare I've ever received came from a nurse and never from a doctor. Because there's also a dichotomy there where you have the doctor and the nurse, and typically it's, you know, you defer to the doctor.
Nurse is generally coded feminine, even if it's
well,
not
no,
true.
Like nurses are generally coded as lesser than, when it's like the actual truth of the matter is they sometimes know more than the doctors, unless it's like a big life-threatening, like, oopsie-doopsie, there's some kind of rare flesh-eating virus that you have.
That's when you call House. Doctor House.
Why would I call my house? We don't even have a phone here.
He's a doctor. He's got to do a house call.
Anyways.
I think a lot of my favorite moments from this era of the show are when Rory gets mad at the doctor. Because there's a few times that it happens where Rory is just like really angry that the doctor crosses a line. Because at first it's like because his life is dangerous. And then it's because, you know, he's not being considerate of like other people's feelings. And now it's because he's belittling him and he goes, no. And those are my favorite moments when Rory reveals that he is not just like a joke. He is like a person with feelings and values. And he's not like an aggressive person, but he is a fully rounded
like
character.
Rory is not one to be stepped on as often as he might be.
Yeah. It makes it clear that the times it's happening, it is because he allows it, not because he is like a doormat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think those moments help flesh his character out quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. And it also helps, too, that we get to see. We get to see more of Brian and how Rory interacts with his dad. And just how deeply his dad cares about things and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is really nice, especially to see how much Brian likes the doctor. Because they do.
Likes the doctor, but Brian is also a dad.
Yeah. They have a really good moment here that I think also rounds out his character quite a bit, where because they sort of make him a bit of a joke when he's like, I'm just doing what the doctor said. I'm sitting here and I'm going to watch this for day after day after day. But then when Amy and Rory like come back from their 7 weeks of anniversary shenanigans,
which also I really like that this is the first time in a hot minute we have seen the TARDIS get to help people play dress up. We don't get enough playing dress up on this show.
Yeah, we should really have some more dress ups. Some more Barbie's dream TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the moment where Brian's like, how long were they gone for? Because they're wearing different clothes.
He's observant.
Yeah, I like that it adds a little bit to him where it makes it clear that he is not, he's also not just like a bit character who's there for a joke. He's got like, yes, he's watching the cubes, but it's because one of his talents is being observant. I also like that he's the one who tells them to go on their adventure. That feels very like.
Yeah, because he needs a house to stay in.
Well, it feels very much like, a parent letting a bird leave the nest sort of situation.
Even though it's
their nest and he's just kind of staying in it.
It did strike a very particular chord with something that, like, I can't say that I relate to it specifically, but I just remember, like, being in a situation where I was going back and forth, like, oh, should I go and do this thing? Like, oh, should I leave for 10 days and go to this, to a different country? And, oh, I don't know. And I can't leave all my stuff behind. And my cats, who's going to watch over my cats? And my mom specifically being the person to be like, go live your life, with the subtext of you are young. If the most responsibility you have right now is who is going to water my plants and take care of my cats.
This is your time to go do things.
And that is definitely something that subtext was what Brian was telling Amy and Rory.
Brian! Because, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Fun fact, in our house, we all have a vocal stim, which is making fun of my cat in the way that she meows. Which is also... God, there's layers to that, because it's not even that. It's then making fun of a particular vocal stim that I had with a very dear friend of mine because of a Twilight Zone episode.
And because at the end of the episode, a woman like is trying to get her husband her dead husband on the phone. But I've only ever heard you say it like a hawk going, Brian.
Well, yeah, because that's how it sounds, because it's a really sad episode.
Yeah, just picturing Cassie is a chicken running around in the backyard.
Brian! Well, yeah, because then the more you do it like that, the better it sounds like Bailey. Anyways.
Yeah, so now every time Brian's on screen, there's a part of me that has to fight the urge to go, Brian!
But yeah, there's a parental quality there of Brian kind of giving Amy and Rory, not necessarily permission, but that like push.
Yeah. And I think it works.
Because I think he can very clearly tell that the doctor really cares about Amy and Rory. And we even got another very sweet mini monologue of the doctor talking about the reason why he cares so much about Amy and Rory, and why he can't bear to lose them and to leave them, is because Amy's was the first face he saw.
The first face this face saw is what he says. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Because that is true. He popped his little head out of the TARDIS and went, hello, down to little Amelia.
That is so sweet and sad.
Speaking of like these moments, I also think that Brian letting them go is also a really like good character moment, because there's a bit from that he asked the doctor, like, what happens to the other people that travel with you? And the doctor has to go, you know, some leave, some get left behind, and some, very few, die. And Brian still says, go with them. He says, bring them back safe, but he says, but you, you know.
Yeah, he says it as a very stern father would, bring them back safe. We're completely skipping over one of my favorite my favorite bit characters, Kate Stewart.
Yeah, Kate Stewart is how she introduces herself. And the doctor very quickly puts together that is a dropped surname of Kate Lethbridge Stewart, daughter of Brigadier Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart.
Alistair. Yeah. Such a cool name.
Yeah. So I don't know if you remember this. In fact, I'm going to bet that you don't.
That's a safe bet.
When the doc at the end of the last season, when the doctor is about to go on his it's time for me to die moment at Lake Silencio, he keeps trying to push it off. But the thing that motivates him is someone calls the TARDIS phone and tells him the Brigadier died. The actor that played the Brigadier, Nicholas Courtney, had died in real life shortly before the filming that. So I think the show realized that they had sort of lost an opportunity to bring that character in. He does have an episode in the Sarah Jane Adventure, so he isn't totally removed, but he never got to go back into Doctor Who proper again.
It feels it
for a character that was in the show for so long of the classic series.
It's like when you're 6 or 7 or 8 mm-hmm. and you get a really cool toy and you play with it every day, and then it gets put into a box, and that box gets put up into the top of the shelf, and then years later, when you're cleaning out your closet, you find the toy and you go, oh my God. It's like it's how I feel with my Nintendo SP.
Yeah, only it's like that, and you pull it out of the box and you realize that the toy's in there, but then you open it and the toy is melted.
Yep.
And so I think they realized they had lost an opportunity to really like bring the Brigadier back. Because he, if you consider him a companion, he is the longest running companion on the show. He first appeared with the second Doctor, and he appeared all the way until the seventh. He was a mainstay in the show, in the classic series.
Whatever the tier under companion is.
Yeah, ally or friend. Friend of the TARDIS.
Comrade.
And so I think they realized
they
had lost an opportunity. Like, and so I think they wanted to find a way to tie it back in without losing him. So they brought UNIT in, the Unified Intelligence Task Force, run by his daughter, Kate Lethbridge Stewart, or just Kate Stewart. And she
who already just, oh, the Doctor, I was so hoping I'd meet you.
And I don't know if this is too much of a spoiler for you, but Kate Stewart is still in the show.
Hooray!
she, much like the Brigadier, is around a lot.
Hooray!
I'm really glad that they kept her, especially because her actress is fantastic.
Yeah.
Kate Stewart is a wonderful character that has like a nice, like, middle. In the same way that you said, like, what's right under companion, she does seem to fit right between the Doctor and the companion in terms of, like, sitting between reality and the science fiction of the show, where, like, clearly they're on board with what the Doctor is, and so they know more than the companion.
Well, she was able to speak to him directly through his psychic paper.
Yeah. And summon them to the Tower of London.
That's skill I didn't know anybody could have.
We've only ever seen one other character do that. River Song. That was how they got someone to the library. So that's the secret. The secret is if a woman can talk to the Doctor through psychic paper.
Yeah. No, that tracks. Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
Huge props to Gemma Redgrave, who is the actress for...
Gemma?
Yeah, her name is Gemma Redgrave.
That is the coolest name I've ever heard.
Yeah, she's a fantastic actress. She really does a great job with that part, and she... the character doesn't necessarily go in interesting directions, but she always brings an energy to it that
that's fine.
That is nice.
If we're going to have a two-dimensional bit character that is...
I wouldn't say two-dimensional, but there's no, like...
She's not going to have her own arc,
yeah, no, she
I imagine.
Doesn't really have character arcs as much as she has, like... She is the stand-in for politics in most episodes.
That's fine. Again, it's a woman in charge trope that I appreciate.
Yeah, and so she's a lot of fun. I'm really glad we had that. I like that she there's immediately like a shift when she shows up, not just because she's surrounded by men with guns, but because she immediately like pulls out like a tech device that shows the Doctor's two beating hearts as through like an X-ray. That she's got like this. How do I describe it? There's like an energy to her where it feels like someone very capable and in command is also trying very hard not to geek out in that moment, because you have to imagine that this is a person, she's meeting a person that she has heard about her entire life. Every story her father ever told her started with, so the Doctor showed up.
And she's 50.
I think she's younger than that.
40 something.
One second. So this would be 13 years ago. Actually, yeah, no, she would have been about 50. She was 47 at the time.
Okay.
46, 47, depending on when they filmed it. But yeah. So I guess she was around 50. Yeah. And, you know, definitely holds her.
Well, what I'm more or less getting with that is somebody who has lived a majority of their life having heard tales of the Doctor, but never having once met them.
Yeah. And it's fun to see this actress that is, you know, probably a couple decades older than Matt Smith, but has to act like she's the, like, I'm the one regressing to childhood in a sense, kind of like excited, I want to meet the Doctor way. Mm-hmm. But it's very like subtextual. Like there's a lot going on in her performance. That's not like, overt, and I really appreciate that.
It has the same energy as like when talent and celebrities would come into
the talent
when they would come into my Starbucks, mm-hmm. and then I would have to play it coy and be like, oh, what name would you like me to put on the cup? As a cheeky, like, I know your name, but I don't want to out you in front of the nobody else who's here.
As opposed to, I know your name, but I don't want to out you to everyone else that's here. What is your name again?
No, because it was the likes of, like, Humble Brag, like, Penn Jillette, Josh Gad, Taika Waititi.
Gotcha.
Some of my favorite people that I just had to be like, it's no thing. Like, it's whatever's. Like, you could come in here. You could go somewhere else. Please stay here.
Please stay and tell me your stories.
Yeah. Please remember me forever, even though I know you won't.
Before we go deeper, I would like to briefly touch into my new segment, which is my guess for Cassie's favorite moment of the episode.
Okay.
Would you like to tell me your favorite moment of the episode, Cassie?
No, because I'm distracted by something that I wrote. Here we go. I'm just going to say it. The Sonic screwdriver, that bitch is just a magic wand.
A little bit. They definitely treat it like one of the...
Today, with the little screens and just doing exactly what it needs. That's a magic wand. Moving on. I will take no other further questions.
I mean, especially his, because you got the original classic Doctors, which is he holds it upright. This one, and even the last two to an extent, all extend outwards like a wand.
Like, there's a part of me that knows, like, I know we've had a discussion about Inchuties, because it's a Sonic, it's not a screwdriver, it's effectively a Spy Kids.
Yeah, it looks like a remote.
Multi-tool.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that's like, well, at least it takes away the magic wand quality. I think Whitaker's is the most wand-like.
A little bit.
This can be its whole own thing. So I will stop there. But if anybody wants me to go on a whole tangent about Sonics and magic wands... please leave a like in the comment.
Meanwhile, I guess Capaldi might have the least wand like because he has Sonic sunglasses.
Forgot about his little sunnies. Anyways.
I don't know if you remember we were doing this, but every episode,
you sneak it in. You sneak it in somewhere.
I guess Cassie's favorite moment. And I think this one might be better instead of me stating it, if I sang it. I really felt, especially in the moment, I don't know if it still held true, but seeing your face when they said on a loop.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's the specificity of knowing that there was a cube somewhere that was just playing the chicken dance on forever. It has the same energy as my favorite Kumail Nanjiani bit, which is him talking about Pakistani birthdays, mm-hmm. and how the soundtrack for the birthday was just happy birthday, thank you very much. And it wasn't two guys singing happy birthday, thank you very much, happy birthday, thank you very much. It was just one person on a loop. And there's just something so funny to me about something really stupid being...
It's the same energy as John Mulaney's bit where he puts on What's New Pussycat for like 10 songs in a row on
seven.
A jukebox.
Oh, seven. It's 21 in total. After the seventh, it's... one, it's not unusual, and then the chaos ensues. Because after the second play around of What's New Pussycat, you go, What's New Pussycat is a little longer than I remember. Which then brought me to what I want to see come to fruition, Forever ABBA. Because I have a theory that in certain spots in Dancing Queen, you can splice parts of the song together to just make it go on infinitum.
Friday night and the lights are low. Friday night and the lights are low.
It's not it's not repeating the lyrics over and over again. There's parts musically where you can put them in the middle of the song and then just make it go on for hours. And it's something that I feel very passionately about, but I have not the means to do it myself.
We just need to look up.
And nobody wants to help me with this.
Find 10 hours of Dancing Queen compilation on YouTube.
No, because it's not, I don't want the song over and over again.
I know, but we would have to make one and then somebody wouldn't catch it until it was too late.
Like, could you imagine putting that song at the very top of like a playlist at like a skating rink? People would not notice until it's been like 15 minutes in and it's still Dancing Queen. That's so, the gays would be so mad, but respect the hustle.
You have to find a way to somehow sync up this 15 hour play of Dancing Queen with Dark Side of the Moon.
Because there is Infinite Jukebox, which does play songs like that. But the way that they do it is not the way that I know. I need to break the song apart musically and do this. This is a tangent you didn't want me to go on, so I will stop it here. Magic wands are sonic screwdrivers, and Dancing Queen can last forever. So go on. But yes, I do think that. Not the moment itself, but the concept of a cue playing infinite chicken dances.
Which tells me that at some point, that cube heard the chicken dance. And whatever little man is inside that cube went, oh, I've got an idea.
Yeah, so that tells me that when all of the cubes were lined up before they were dispatched, they received very specific orders to simply observe. Mm-hmm. And that each cube needed to figure out its own bit. So one went, clearly, I'm going to have spikes. I'm going to check pulse. One said, I'm going to have fire. Another one said, okay, like after a while, when humans have a lot of emotions, this is good, I can bank on this. And then one of them went, what? If, and I'm just spitballing here, what if I play the most annoying song over and over again? Because I'd like to think that the cube thought for a while about which song it was going to play forever. What other songs did the cube shuffle through before it landed on Chicken Dance? Because my bet was Yakety Sax, but I think that's a little bit too much.
I also like the idea that when you say, and I'm just spitballing here, another cube went, spitballs. I have my idea.
You're doing it all wrong. We all know what the sound of spit makes. It's a haktua.
Yeah, but that's the sound of spitting on that thing, not spitting a ball.
Haktua. Or I guess it's a blow dart. Yeah.
What are some other ideas?
Yeah, what are some other songs? What are some other songs?
Oh, you're thinking songs, just the songs. I was just trying to think of what else the cubes might be doing.
Well, no, because I'm really trying to figure out what other songs the cube cycled through before it picked Chicken Dance.
Mickey is probably a pretty good one.
Oh, ooh. Mickey is defiant. See, I'd like to think that the cube thought that that would be too complicated.
It was too long for the cube to record. I don't have enough tape for this.
Another version.
Barbie Girl would probably be a pretty good one.
I still think that's too complicated.
What were you thinking then?
So I have a few ideas. Again, Yakety Sax. I think that one's too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that one? There was another creepy cube that absolutely picked Daisy.
Yeah, probably. That's a pretty good one. Yeah. Do you think there's a cube out there that just periodically would go,
that was you, cube.
Just a cube that's like tries to sound like scared or frightened or make someone jump, just so it was periodically throughout the day it goes, ha!
It has the same energy as those videos of like 10 hours of silence interrupted by what was it, it's like 10 hours of silence interrupted by a dodgeball. It's so scary.
God, that has to be another one too. One of the cubes just has to start throwing itself at people. Just dodge block, just thunk.
Because if we have a laser gun, then that means like there has to be ones that are shooting paintballs and water and jizz and piss. I don't know where it got either of those, but
I don't know where it got plasma for laser cannons either.
Exactly. Oh my god, one of them is shooting out whipped cream. Oh.
One is playing Dancing Queen for 17 hours on a loop.
Yeah, that would be me. Actually, no. No, I think if you were one of the cubes, what would your special power
like,
be?
Oh, like if okay, so what you're saying not what would a cube do to attack me?
No, I like that idea much better, actually. Do that.
Okay, I feel like it would play like it would be just like floating behind me as I'm walking and just playing like sad tuba music. Just
like that Family Guy bit.
Yeah, exactly. It would just be like playing dopey music behind me everywhere I go to like make me feel fat or sad or like I tied my shoelaces together. Like it's just picking on me. Like it's one of those where it's like, okay, this doesn't really feel like an attack. This is just kind of annoying. But then by like the third or fourth hour of it continuing, I'm like trying to find a way to strangle a cube.
See, I think my cube would do something that the cats do here,
oh, yeah?
Which is just getting a little bit in my way.
Oh, yeah, they do that.
Like not so much in the way where it's like, oh, this is a hazard,
mm-hmm.
but just enough where like I stub my toe.
Yeah. Accidentally kick one of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because then after you do that enough times, like it's infuriating.
See, I thought you were going to say one of the things that cats do that bothers you, which is just Brian.
Yeah,
no. Brian.
No, because I think it's funny. I don't know why she sounds like she's lost. You've lived here for long enough. She knows where she is.
You would think that, but she.
One would think.
She.
I mean, because the other one echolocates, so.
Well, the other one's a cryptid, so you gotta understand.
Gotcha.
Mutt Man. That's gotta be one of the songs, right? Macho Man?
Oh, that's very good.
If you like piña coladas.
No, I'm too sexy.
Here's another good cube moment. I think one would be like trying to start a song, but never can quite find the right pitch.
It's just, oh, right pitch, yeah. Not right song.
Yeah, no. So it keeps, you keep hearing like the beginning of.
If. It's that little girl that's trying to sing the song from Titanic and getting so mad.
You keep hearing like the beginning notes of Never Gonna Give You Up. There's we're start over. We're still wrong. Do it again.
I don't think you don't hear any still wrong. You just hear the beginning like drums. But there's that little pause that just gets longer and longer every time you restart the song. So you're like, oh, okay, it's over now. Fuck! Like, because I'm trying to think about in the context of our home, if four cubes just manifested, we absolutely would put those like under the TV. We would use it as a means for a tchotchke.
Yeah,
if
it was just like a free thing, you would have like tried to construct a chair out of them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's when that definitely a cube did was just like followed its owner around and just like mocked them. She's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Stop it. Damn it. Go back to your plate. Go back to your plane. Why is the, what is, honey, something's wrong with the cubes. Honey, something's wrong with the cubes. That's you.
It's like that bit from oh my god, The Grinch.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
I'm an idiot.
You're an idiot. You're an idiot. Yeah. I think we could go on for way longer.
Oh, we
absolutely
could. I think if we sat here and just like really wanted to dig into it, we could do this 4 hours. Here's a fun thing though. If you're listening, come tell us what you think a cube would do on our various social medias.
Oh my god, yes. Either what it would do or specifically what it would do to you.
Twitter, Blue Sky, or Threads at WIMDPOD, WIMDPOD. I'd say Instagram, but I don't think you could share this kind of comment on Instagram.
No. I mean, unless we were really more affluent and posted stuff, but nah.
That's not what this podcast isn't about pictures. It's about our beautiful voices.
Although, speaking of pictures.
The tally! Well, yes.
Speaking of pictures.
Yes.
I just want to encourage more people to do fan art. We yeah, I love it. I love
we
seeing
have got
it.
Our first piece of fan art from Big Daddy Dalek patron Travis Aiken, which is some fantastic art. I absolutely adore it. So if anyone else
have
wants
you
to
given him a shout out before,
I mean, at the end of the episodes, because okay, he's a cool patron, but yeah, not in the middle of the episode, though. So
middle of the episode. Oh, my God, Travis, you're extra special now.
So big thanks to him for that. And if anyone else wants to, I certainly am not going to begrudge them for giving some, because I've been making content on the internet since 2010, and it was the first time I've ever gotten fan art of any kind. It was very neat. Mm-hmm. There was a couple other things in this episode that I had just taken note of that I thought you would like. Hmm. Not necessarily in run.
Now, what were some of the other things? Because I don't know how many things I like you write down.
Because these weren't necessarily in the running to be like the favorite moments.
Okay.
But they were just like, I think Cassie will like these. And it's when the cube starts floating, the doctor goes, oh, so you float now? I had a metal dog that could do that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
any moment K-9 shows up, even just in passing.
Yes, master.
Affirmative. Yeah.
And then the other one, you sort of already referenced it, but when the doctor's heart fails and Matt Smith just has to like wriggle around like a little scramble man.
Yeah.
Just not sure how to pilot his arms. And he gets like really bitchy about it, too. He's like, how do you function with only one? It's so lame.
I don't know that I liked that, but you definitely liked placing me in that scenario and saying, oh my God, that's like you when you get sick.
To be honest, the doctor this episode a lot felt like you to me.
Thank you.
Like what he's just like, you can be patient. I have to go do things. I'm going to get up. And then like does an enormous amount of things, comes back like, there, how much time was that? About an hour. Ah! Or like when you're sick or not feeling well, that same like, I just need to reach out and share my pain with someone.
Oh, yeah. I know. I've been so dramatic when I'm sick with the no, you don't understand.
And then when he's playing Wii tennis and he just wants the cube to get out of his face, he's like, all right, out of the way, dear. I'm playing.
Yeah.
It felt very, very much like you trying to be polite while you just shooed someone off.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, this episode is a little weird, but it's very fun.
Weird in a good way.
Yeah, weird in a good way. It's definitely different from the other episodes, but not in like an unwelcome way, but and also not in a way that doesn't feel like the show. Like it's got a different
flavor.
It's a different flavor of the same food.
Yeah.
I really like it. And this
it's like when you have salted Pringle or like salty Lay's chips. This episode is like a baked Lay's chip where it was like, oh, okay, cool. It's still a Lay's chip, but
If you remember in the episode where they're talking about, if you remember in Pond Life that we briefly talked about, this episode sort of takes place Pond Life, with the exception of like the obvious,
beginning part,
the beginning part where it's about like before the season, there's some Pond Life beats that happen in this. So when the doctor like burst back into the door, and said, like, we've got to go stop the thing that happened. It's because it's happening during this episode.
Yeah.
He came back at the wrong time. Yeah, I had a really good time. Next episode will also be different, as every episode has been so far this season, but it will be reminiscent of a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because this time we're going to New York City.
The city of angels?
The city of apples?
The big city of apples.
The big angel?
The city of big peaches?
New York City.
Yeah. Or in the voice of my particular reference, New York City.
Yeah, we're going to go to New York City in the next episode. The Angels Take Manhattan.
Oh, no. Oh, geez, Rick.
Yeah, the Anaheim Angels are going to play the New York Yankees in the next episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, cool.
And we will watch that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Good night.
No. Thank you.
everybody doing out there? You guys feeling as powerful as the number three right now? Because that's definitely what this episode was about. It was about three. Anyway, if you like this episode, be sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening now. Or you can find all the podcast places you can subscribe to us over at wimdpod.com. That's WIMDPOD.com. You can also find links to our socials and to our Patreon there, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Big thanks to all our patrons for helping to directly support us, but extra special thanks go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, and Travis Aiken. Next week, we're hitting up the city that's always awake in the Angels Take Manhattan. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.